buscas las ofertas de Early Black Friday en Lowe's, estás justo a tiempo. Ahorra hasta 50% en electrodomésticos selectos y hasta 25% extra en combos de electrodomésticos selectos. ¿Estás pensando ya en poner luces navideñas? Aprovecha ahorros de hasta 50% en escaleras selectas. Precios de Black Friday sin las filas de Black Friday. Lowe's, nosotros ayudamos, tú ahorras. Válido hasta el 11-19, selección varía por tienda, solo en tiendas selectas, hasta agotar existencias. Detalles en Lowe's.com.
Welcome to Vega's World. It's time to party. I'm your most excellent host, JC Vega. Thank you all for tuning in. A lot of fun stuff to talk about this week, so let's just dive right in, shall we? Fede Alvarez has this to say about Romulus 2. As we all know, Alien Romulus was a commercial success, a critical success. It was a return to form in a lot of fans' eyes and a lot of nods to, you know, the first two films as well as Alien Isolation. Fede Alvarez is a big, big fan of the Alien franchise, so there's a lot of nods to almost everything, even things that I don't necessarily like and I wish weren't a part of it. That's neither here nor there. But is he returning for Alien Romulus? Yes. Will he be directing it? No. He had this to say. I don't think I was ever going to direct Romulus 2. We always knew right when we finished this was one of those things where you come in and you do one and you get out. Cameron, Fincher, all those directors I love, they went and did one. Obviously, Ridley created it, and he has the right to make a bunch of them, the filmmaker explained to the crowd, because he said this at the Horror Hound weekend. I guess it's a Comic-Con for, or not a Comic-Con, it's a con for horror fans, you know, for that quote about Ridley Scott deserving to get more. He didn't create it. He was just the director. He had nothing to do with the writing of the first film. That was other people whose names are escaping me right now, and I'm just hostile because, like, people are just bestowing so much power. Dan O'Bannon, Jesus Christ, I had it on top of my head earlier. Dan O'Bannon was the writer of this film, and he has a lot more to do with it than frickin' Ridley Scott. Ridley Scott, yes, he created the atmosphere. He gave great direction, fine, but he gave us a stinker in Prometheus. He gave us a double stinker in Covenant. I don't want to see him do any more. And he even said, oh, I've got an idea for to finish my trilogy. We don't need it. There's a reason why we moved on down the road from this, and why the studio at the time was like, hey, let's do something else, right? And even Disney, when they got it, they're like, you know, let's move on from this David storyline. Who cares? Like, you fumbled the bag. We'll let you stay on as producer. We'll be nice to you in that regard. You know, go make Gladiator 2. Go do something else. You're not directing this. And we'll give you your little weird engineer baby creature thing and your little black goo if you really want it that bad, but that's enough. Just at least, you know, maybe I'm just adding my biases to it, but I don't care. I don't want them near it. But anyway, Fede Alvarez had this to say about writing the film, though. We didn't want to write it. Honestly, it's because we love the characters we created, so we want to make sure no one kills them right at the beginning of the next one. They went and killed Hicks and Nuke just like that in Alien 3. Hey, let's not let that happen again. We wrote it and we made sure they stayed alive, and now we can let someone else make it. You know, and of course, when he's saying that, you know, whoever wrote Alien 3 decided they didn't like Hicks, or Newt, rather, because they felt Newt was annoying, and they killed him off in, like, the first 5 minutes of that film, which, you know, completely undercuts James Cameron's whole story and whatever everything they went through in Aliens. And Hicks's death was retconned in Alien Colonial Marines, as well as Status Interrupted, revealing that Hicks was not a casualty in that crash. Good for him. I've seen other versions of Alien 3. Like, there's a comic book about it. There's a novel about it. You know, I think there's like three different versions of that story alone in different mediums, which is kind of cool. But, you know, hey, if Fede wants to co-write this film along with Roydo Sayagas, that sounds like a right. It sounds right to me. Words are hard, people. I may be able to talk good. It's all good. I feel like Zoolander character right now. Nonetheless, you know, hey, if he's going to do that, cool for him. I wish he'd come back and direct too, but, you know, hey, fine. If you just want to write, that's great. Just keep Ridley Scott away. Don't let him do another prequel. Get him the fuck away from anything to do with Alien. Like, fine, let him have his producer credit, but God, please, no. Just in my misery now. Speaking of Alien, though, I got a bone to pick with Alien Earth. You know, it started out really, really well, you know? A lot of interesting plots. Prodigy, you run by a really young billionaire, trillionaire type. He's super young, super arrogant. Fine, cool, I can live with that. Synths, hybrids, who are people who are ex-people with, you know, a synth body, but the consciousness of human being. Are they human? Are they not? Could have been interesting. But where we went with it, it's just, you know, how, you know, if Slightly can hear, you know, Moro in his head, how come no one who's, like, monitoring all these synths, like, you know, all these hybrids, how come, they don't notice any of that? Like, they could tell that Wendy was controlling, you know, things from a touch screen that wasn't a touch screen, that she can fiddle with that. Why didn't they notice this? Or maybe they did. But then again, maybe they did, because Kirsch is, like, you know, hiding the fact that something happened to one of the other synths, like Toodles, when he got hurt. He hid that from Boy Cavalier and then mentioned it kind of later. Then Cavalier, not really upset that he lost this, he's like, well, there's $6 million down the drain. It's like, bro, this super advanced technology that you had is just fucked up. What are we doing here? And if you're going to wipe the girl's memory, Nibs, who's, you know, thinking she's having a baby, how about let the others know, hey, we're gonna wipe her memory so she doesn't remember the last couple of days, so don't say anything about it, because, you know, Wendy's talking to her like, remember you said you're pregnant, and she's like, what, I never said that, what are you talking about, what ship, like all this goofy stuff. And it's like, bro, let them know, what are we doing here? And how does a guy who's fired from the corporation still have access to the computers to monitor things and just go down and check, and just all these little inconsistencies that doesn't make sense. And to be honest, you know, I think episode 5 it was that we went back and saw what happened with the Maginot and like how it came to crash and all that. And I really wish we wouldn't have done that. Like, if we were gonna show it, like, why not just show it all in the first episode? You know, I mean, I would have rather that than how we got it, because we started progressing into the story and then we're going to like go all the way back and spend a whole episode on that. Like, no, it's gone. I don't care anymore. Like, we're past that. I'm interested in the other threads that you have laid out before me, especially with these hybrids and what that means and the brother who's on the island. And we're just backtracking? No. And even then, the explanation I didn't necessarily like, because how the fuck is this expedition to this faraway place 65 years, right? And suddenly they have instant FaceTimes, which none of the other Alien movies, as far as I remember, could have communication like that. Like, it takes time for the messages to float through to space to connect to wherever it was going. Why? How did he know this dude was on the ship? How did he get a hold of the guy? How did he know that Prodigy existed? Because he's been gone for 65 years. Like, when Moro came back, he was like, hey, I want to speak to Yutani. Oh, my grandmother's dead. Like, a lot of shit you missed. Your kid's dead. Everything you know is gone. So how would this pilot or whoever, this engineer, whoever the fuck he was, I can't remember exactly his title, but this the plot line was stupid. How did he know Boy Cavalier? And how was he able to sabotage the whole thing and get this whole thing and how are you going to be able to plot the course for a crash when you're already in space to know where exactly on the planet it would be rotating to so that to get it there? It just raises too many damn questions. I would play the Val Kilmer clip, but I don't have it on the standby. Noah Hawley, what is going on, brother? I gave you a lot of praise for Legion. I thought you were pretty good at this, and usually I like your stuff, but what is going on here with this, man? It feels like we're taking a big step back, and I don't like it. And it was kind of neat when they had, you know, Nibs go almost psycho robot on her therapist lady. That was kind of neat. You know, could have played more with that. And like, at this one point, these, you know, because they're kids, they're temperamental, they could easily, you know, burst into anger because they're still developing brains, technically, I guess, or that's their consciousness. But yeah, we just kind of skirt around that a little bit. I think I mentioned this already. I don't remember. But yeah, a guy still able to have access to the computers to know what's going on, even though he was fired. Why wouldn't you, like, deny his access? And what was another thing that bothered me about the show? so far? Mr. Tang, was he a synth? Was he just a weirdo? What was going on with that guy? Why didn't we get any explanation on it? Because it felt like he was just an android, but I don't know. Just the way, and then, okay, the kids are the hybrids, the little kids that they were dying and stuff. Why did you have a burial site for them? You acted like these are property and not real people. Why would you have the courtesy to bury them? And why give them little plots with their names on it, their actual names? I don't understand. Who is that site for? Because I don't think the other scientists and stuff would go out to visit it. I don't think Boy Cavalier is that sentimental. I get it for the sake of Joe and them trying to escape the island. They're going to come across it. So they, oh my God, this is messed up in a sense. But I would feel like he would have cremated them and just sent them packing. Some of these decisions, I swear, man, I don't understand. And I don't know if I want to see a second season of this. I don't even know how they're going to wrap up this season. And if it's even worth it, maybe he knew that, oh, this might not be so great that we might get a second season. So I'll just do all this ideas right now. Boom. I have no idea. I don't know what they're thinking, but it just feels like a step back and we're just sliding on back down. And it doesn't make sense to me, brother. I don't understand. I wish I could. I wish you'd make sense of it. Maybe I'll listen to a podcast or two later and then come back and air some more grievances about it. But I just not feeling it. Not feeling it at all whatsoever. So, but other than that, Peacemaker season 2, that was really good. I like it so far. John Cena is doing a lot of good stuff. His acting, his emotional weight of his character, what he's dealing with now, from the past season and the trauma that he's had with his life, his relationship with his dad, the death of his brother, and then going and jumping to this new universe where his brother is alive and a grown man, and his dad's not garbage human being, and he's dealing with the weight of that, and accidentally killing himself, but even though it was self defense, but it's just that whole dynamic. I wonder if they're gonna touch on that towards the end of the season. That's been fun. I don't like Tim Meadows in the show. I mean, I know some people like his comedy, but he's not, I don't like him in this. I find him very annoying and grating and just would rather him not be there. It's always annoying when he shows up. Frank Grillo is fantastic in his role as Rick Flag Sr. He's a badass. He's always been a badass in a lot of other roles, but he's really top notch here too. I'm liking that. I'm very interested to see where, the season ends and where it's going to take us, because apparently it's got implications for what's to come in the DCU, so that'll be a lot of fun. I think I mentioned this before, but I'll say it again. I did like how they kind of, waved away the fact that the first season was in the DCEU and says, oh, yeah, all this stuff that happened is actually in the DCEU, and it's the Justice Gang that was at the end of that last season. So there's that. Fixed it. Hilarious. Loved it. Loved the way they did it. That was fun. What's another fun thing? Economos, yeah, he's grown on me this season. He was just kind of there the first season for me, but I have enjoyed his work and his being torn between being a friend to Peacemaker and helping them versus doing his job for Argus and all that stuff. Harcourt. She's got a lot of shit to deal with in this season because, she ain't where she was last season because of what happened with Amanda Waller's daughter outing them and outing her for what she's been doing. So, yeah, fun show, fun season, and it's way better than Alien Earth. An Arnold Schwarzenegger iconic franchise is doing a Christmas crossover, and it's not the one you think. You would think it'd be a Jingle All the Way special, right? But nope, Dynamite Entertainment has announced they are doing The Terminator. Santa Claus is coming to town. It's a one-shot, and its blurb reads as this. Humanity is on the naughty list. In the war-torn apocalyptic future conquered by the forces of Skynet, Christmas Eve is far from festive. Yet even in the crumbling remains of civilization with rubble and death around every corner, a scant few surviving elders of the resistance carry the torch for the Christmas spirit. In between drone attacks, the younger members of the movement are eager to hear these heartwarming fables of Christmas past. To these youngest in the vigilantly surviving human race, the stories of the jolly old man in his ruby-red robes who infiltrated the homes of everyone across the globe are especially intriguing. How did he avoid the sentries and guard dogs? What kind of exfiltration techniques was he using? Did he have glowing red eyes to match his fur-trimmed hat? How different was he from the hulking mechanical monsters now advancing on their positions? So that does sound interesting. I don't think I'm going to read it. And it's definitely not going to, you know, expand the lore of Terminator by any means. But that's fun for some people, I guess. And Terminator fans, it's a story. It's more than James Cameron's got right now, because apparently he's going to try to reboot the damn thing, which I've said a couple weeks ago that I don't like. And I hope they just keep away from it. Batista has been cast as the Kurgan in the Highlander reboot, helmed by Chad Stahelski, who is famous for his role in creating the John Wick universe. Batista had this to say about the role as the Kurgan. This goes back a long time because I've been chasing this role. I think probably I tweeted about this role, about being the Kurgan, more than 10 years ago. I've been chasing this role like I've been chasing the Marcus Fenix role in Gears of War, just because I was a huge fan of the original Highlander. I always loved Clancy Brown's performance as the Kurgan. I always wanted to be the Kurgan. I don't know why. There was something magical about that role. He's the villain I love to hate. Same with wrestling. I like being the bad guy. And that was the kind of role I've been searching for as far as being the bad guy. Now, you may be aware, or you may not be aware, Henry Cavill is cast as Connor McCloud, who's, you know, famously played by, I would say famously, if his name's on the tip of my tongue, why can I not think of his name at this? I'm professional. Christopher Lambert, Jesus, man. Christopher Lambert, you know, he played Raiden too as well. He's, you know, he was phenomenal in The Highlander. It's going to be a reboot, and, you know, I said stop with the reboots, but this could be fun, you know? I mean, while The Highlander is a cult classic, it wasn't necessarily the greatest film. Maybe, you know, some of the elements of it were intriguing, and it could have probably been fully fleshed out more. I mean, Queen did the soundtrack for it, so that was badass, and I think that's probably helped a lot for its iconic status, if you will. But, you know, Batista, he's a persistent man, and he said this about meeting Chad Stahelski. Chad came to the Killer Games premiere, and he made sure that I had a moment to meet with Chad and tell him how much I was interested in the role. And I did. I went straight out. I came straight out. I don't play coy. If there's something I want, I aggressively pursue it, and I'm very vocal about it. I'm not too shy to tell you that I want something. He was there, and I just went up to him and said, hey, it's so good to see you again, because we met years back. I said, man, I'm not going to mess around. I was like, I want this role. Tell me what I've got to do to get this role. I think he was just like, slow your horses, slow your roll. He wasn't there yet, but he said he'd let me know when he was thinking about it. He's still thinking about casting and everything. And of course, you know, weeks went by. He felt like he was going to get the role. Then out of nowhere, he got a call, and they said, hey, do you still want the role? He was like, and I quote, I was like, fuck yeah, I want the role. He's like, I'll send you the script tomorrow. Tell me about what you think. And he was blown away by the script. And he said, he doesn't want to give out too much away, but he said, it's such a great reboot. We're still paying tribute and giving nod to the original, making it new and fresh and exciting and just universe building. It's so much bigger than the original. The action is on par with John Wick. I'm afraid I'm going to say too much. I don't want to give anything away, but I think people are going to be blown away by this because it's bigger than you imagine. And it's new enough that you won't be seeing the same thing. If you saw the original, you're still not going to know what the story is. And, you know, for that, I'm excited. I like The Highlander, and it's cool. Batista's a great actor. Henry Cavill is a phenomenal actor, such a nerd. You know, it's crazy what happened to him with other projects, but we'll get to that in a few moments because I got to talk about that. But this could be a lot of fun. You know, Chad Stahelski hasn't done wrong with the John Wick franchise. Henry Cavill, you know, he's a very solid actor. Batista, again, just knocking it out of the park. One of the better wrestler turned actors ever. I mean, I know the bar is pretty low, guys. I mean, you know, not all roles are created equal and not all of them had great success, but Batista's at the top of that list. You know, like I said, John's done really well. Also in this film is going to be Russell Crowe, Karen Gillian, Digimon Howso. I can't pronounce the dude's name, but he's in a lot of stuff. If you see the face, you'll know who I'm talking about, or just Google search him. You'll be like, oh, that guy. And Max Zhang and Marissa Alba. So it's a star-studded cast. It's going to be pretty cool. I know Amazon MGM has it right now, as far as that goes. So I guess it's going to be a streaming deal, or maybe one of those deals where, like, first week they'll put it out on the theaters and then, you know, go to hit the streaming service. Time will tell, but I'm curious to see Henry Cavill's take on Connor McLeod and Batista's, you know, as the Kurgan, because that'll be cool. That'll be really, really cool. Kristen Melody won her first ever Emmy for Outstanding Lead Actress in a Limited Series for her brilliant portrayal as Sophia Falcone in the HBO series. However, she will not be in the Batman 2. Womp, womp, womp. Matt Reeves said this. Kristen is not in this one, he said, but that's because we were so deep into the script by the time we were in the show, but we'll see. I mean, I think she's incredible. What she did in the show is just astonishing. So maybe we might get a season 2. Maybe she might be in the Batman 3. I don't know. There's talks about even more spinoffs in the Matt Reeves universe besides the Penguin. There's a lot of stuff going on there. You know, it's a crime that Colin Farrell didn't get a win in that, but he was nominated, so that was cool. He was the only star besides Melody and Deidred O'Connell to get a major nod for their performances in the show. That's pretty cool. Hey, look at that. Comic book television is getting its flowers, so to speak. O'Connell, who played Frances Cobb, she was nominated for Outstanding Supporting Actress in a Limited Series. The show was also nominated for crime drama, an Outstanding Limited Series, Outstanding Directing for a Limited Series, and Outstanding Writing in a Limited Series. So that's cool. So all in all, the Penguin had 24 nominations and 9 wins, including 8 at the Creative Arts Emmys held earlier this month. The acclaimed HBO series faced stiff competition from Stephen Graham's hit Netflix series Adolescence, which won many of the top honors in the limited series category. So that's pretty cool. Sucks that she's not in it, but, you know, more on that later. And some fun, interesting news. Some anime news, if you will. Demon Slayer, the movie Infinity Castle, is set to soar past the $500 million mark in a couple of days. At this recording, it's probably already happened. This article by Collider was posted 3 days ago, and it has even surpassed, it's entered the top 300 of all-time movies, surpassing Tim Burton's biggest film hit in the last 15 years, Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice. It's passed also The Hangover. It's overtaken Star Trek Into the Darkness, as well as The Matrix. That's crazy. It's passed as the money The Matrix made in Alice in Wonderland, Fantastic Four, First Steps, looks like. That's cool for them. And, like, you know, it just shows the drawing power of anime. And, you know, from what I've seen of season 1 of Demon Slayer, I liked it. I've been touch and go with it. I've been trying to watch it, I've tried to restart it a couple times because I've forgotten where I was and what the story was going on in the story. So I've been trying to catch up with that so I can watch the movie. That's even funny. I went to a doctor appointment, and one of the nurses, she's a big fan of it. She noticed I was wearing Demon Hunter sweats one time, so we started talking about the show. That's pretty cool. Also, a fun note, Channing Tatum is one of the voice actors in the English dubbed for the Infinity Castle. So that's kind of cool, and it's funny that it's passed up 10 Burton movies in the box office. That's just wild. And there's been a lot of talk recently about what's going to happen with Daredevil because, you know, Born Again, the first season, was filming, and halfway through that production, the writer's strike happened. I didn't think of writer's strike, but, like, a lot of stuff happened, and then at some point Disney was like, hey, let's retool this, or Marvel, rather, still Disney. But Marvel was like, let's retool this, let's make it more like the Netflix show, let's bring more of that flavor to it. So it was supposed to be 20 something episodes, like, I think it was, and then they decided to split them up into 2 different seasons, break it up, like, release the first 8 this time or whatever it was, and then come back with the latter half of it. And a lot of people were wondering if we were to get anything after that. You know, Charlie Cox kind of made it seem like it wasn't going to be, a thing. And then lo and behold, we have now been told that season 3 is renewed and it will become the longest running live action series set in the MCU. Because, I mean, Loki only got 2 seasons. Jessica Jones is part of the Netflix original series, but it's cool that as far as under the Marvel television banner as for the MCU, we have got this. And hopefully, you know, more than that, hopefully we see him in the movies. I know they said Kingpin isn't allowed to be in the movies for whatever strange rules they've got going on with that. That's fun. I'm glad that's coming back. I enjoyed season 1 a lot. You know, there was some stuff to be desired, but it satiated the appetite for what was missing from the original series. So that's pretty cool. Glad to hear that. I know other fans will probably be stoked about that. And then in other fun news, Marvel has just revealed Doctor Doom's plans. And it's been teased in, you know, what he could possibly be going after. And there was a laser light show at the Walt Disney World Studios Marketing Expo in Shanghai. And they showed the Ten Rings from that was in Shang-Chi. That was shown. A multiverse was showed featuring the Fantastic Four from their universe, which is the 828. They showed the Avengers logo, which is from Earth 616. And then they showed the X-Men logo, which was from the Fox universe, which is Earth 1005, if I'm correct. And then they what another intriguing thing, they showed the Black Panther insignia. So it seems like T'Challa is going to be recast in this movie, possibly. I mean, why show that if, you know, they're not going to do it? And there's been a lot of talks about, you know, whether they're going to reboot or recast the role after Chadwick Boseman died. And they obviously went with, you know, a different route with Shuri becoming the Black Panther in Wakanda Forever. And, you know, so, I mean, then they referenced T'Challa's son. You know, his name is T'Challa Jr., I guess, if I remember correctly. But, you know, that's cool. But yeah, I understand at the time why they did it, but it'll be cool and interesting to see how they play with this now, and if that T'Challa from this other universe will step into the MCU once Doomsday is over with. Still a lot of mystery, but yeah, it does seem like he's going to be going after the Ten Rings and the Eye of Agamotto. And possibly fans are speculating that Doom might be setting up to create Battle World. So that'd be a lot of fun. You know, the laser light show was pretty cool. Go find it. You can, you know, just type in Marvel or Disney World Expo Shanghai Doctor Doom. That was pretty cool to see. So I'm excited. You know, there's a lot of mystery shrouding it and what's going to happen. They even claimed that David Harbour and John Walker's actor got into a fist fight on the set of Doomsday, which that sounds shocking to me. It could happen. You know, tempers flare sometimes. You don't always get along with everybody, but, you know, you never know with these things. Some fun news for Death Stranding fans. A24 is priming for a movie in the universe. Following the second game's success, got a lot of positive praise. A24 announced in 2022 they had to be behind a live action adaptation of it, and there's not a whole lot of updates about it, but it's been gaining steam since the game, you know, came out. I mean, the latest game had Norman Reedus, Mads Mikkelsen, Leia Sadeo, Margaret Qualley, and even Guillermo del Toro. He was cast in it. There's not a whole lot of news about it. Maybe Norman Reedus will be in this, but it's an active development right now. Producer Alan Ungner told Screen Rant in an interview promoting his new project, London Calling. He was asked about this, and he shared some notes. He confirmed that the project is still active development. He admitted it's always something I can't really talk about. He did confirm it's moving in a very positive direction. So that could be interesting. I haven't played it, but it's Hideo Kojima is a phenomenal creator, you know, mostly video game work. And I know Norman Reedus was actually in Silent Hills or was in the PT thing, and then like for whatever reason they abandoned. There was conflict with the studio, and you know, he couldn't do that story, so they decided to go off and make Death Stranding, and he was also behind the Metal Gear Solid series, so that could be pretty fun. You know, I'm curious to see where it goes. Again, not a whole lot to do with the news because it's still in development, but who knows to see what's going to come out of that in the months and weeks and year to come. In a final bit of news, Miami Vice is set for a remake helmed by the director of F1, Joseph Kosinski. Yeah, Kosinski. I'm sorry. Again, I'm bad with names, guys. I should probably practice. I practice these sometimes before I start recording, and I just still butcher it. So, Joseph Kosinski. I'll just go with that. Sounds right. Director of Top Gun, Maverick, and F1. He's been on a roll, and he's tackling Miami Vice. Miami Vice also had a reboot with Michael Mann. And with Colin Farrell and Jamie Foxx, you know, that was that. It happened. I know he was producer. Michael Mann was producer behind the original television show. So that, you know, I can see why he tried to take a stab at it in the movie. And like Colin Farrell, apparently Jamie Foxx didn't necessarily get along. But this new one is going to be produced by Dylan Clark, the Batman. Kosinski with a screenplay, Kosinski's directing, and a screenplay by Dan Gilroy, a recent Emmy winner for Andor, and Eric Singer of American Hustle, based off, you know, the characters of Miami Vice. And it's apparently going to be set in the 80s. So, you know, we're not going to do a modern, you know, telling of Miami Vice and with modern setting. We're going to go back to the old tried and true 80s aesthetic for this. So I'm sure we'll get, you know, Crockett. I think it's Crockett. Sorry, guys. I'm not that super deep into Miami Vice. I don't know. It was off the air by the time I was alive, and I didn't catch reruns. But you know, I'm sure we'll get the blue shirt and the white blazer and all that fun stuff. But I know like they have a lot of good cameos or big star cameos, you know, in the years to come off that show. So that'll be fun. That could be interesting. You know, Kosinski. You know. Top Gun Maverick did gangbusters. F1 was really good. I haven't seen it yet, but you know, he can't be stopped. And if he's behind the director's chair, behind the wheel, I'd say, haha, make a pun, you know. And with GTA, I guess coming out or is out. I'm sorry, I'm not up on my GTA. You know, Miami Vice or Vice City. You know, people like that 80s aesthetic, so. Maybe we'll get a lot of that vibe from the television show. I mean, I say I haven't seen it, but like I've seen bits and pieces of it, and I get the idea of what the show was because I'm a big fan of Michael Mann. But that could be a lot of fun to see. So, well, time will tell. I think it's been like nearly almost 20 years since 15, since that last movie came out. But we'll see about it. I don't know who they'd cast in the roles of Tubbs and Crockett. I've seen, you know, people do fan castings, and they've had the guy from Rebel Ridge and Austin Butler as their fan casting. Let me look up who the Rebel Ridge. Rebel Ridge. That's the guy. Rebel Ridge. Aaron Pierre. So Aaron Pierre and Austin Butler are people or names they've thrown around for people they want to see as Tubbs and Crockett. And I mean, you know, that's fine. I mean, as long as Austin Butler's not trying to do an Elvis Presley voice the entire time, he's going to just start you know, trying to mimic Don Johnson. I mean, whatever, bro. That's cool, I guess. Whatever floats your boat, bro. But hopefully not. I don't know. Could be interesting. I mean, you know, Aaron Pierre, he did really good in Rebel Ridge. I loved that movie when I watched it, and Don Johnson was in that movie. So funny full circle, if that's the way it goes. Could be a lot of fun. But yeah, that's about covers it for that. And yeah, I think that's all the stuff we want to talk about this week. If you want to support the show, you can follow us at Vegas World Pod on Instagram, Twitter, Blue Sky. Go to the YouTube, subscribe to the YouTube. I got a Street Fighter casting video up, as well as a 5 wrestling matches you should check out. I'm working on some more stuff. I've just been busy with other things and wrestling and life. I'm trying to get back on the grind of doing that, because I'm going to release a video on Drive 1997, as well as an Orphan Black video. And I was just going to do, it's funny how I was just going to do an Orphan Black video just because I love the show and want people to see it, but it just popped up on Netflix. So that'll be a cool little primer to get people intrigued to go watch the show. I feel like you should watch it now. Anyway, Tatiana Maslany is the shit on that show. She's so good, so talented. She's a talented lady in general. I liked her in She-Hulk. I don't care if you don't like She-Hulk. I will fight you if you disrespect the great name of Tatiana Maslany. But anyway, you can find me at the JC Vega on all the social media platforms. Go to ProWrestlingTees.com. Look up me, JC Vega. Get yourself a Vegas World t-shirt. Get yourself a JC Vega t-shirt. One says punk rock, the other says Rainbow Dash. That about covers it. Good night and party on.